Right. Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to the show. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower, here till 5 a.m. My guest right now is Jason Gorber. He is a film journalist. He's based in Toronto. He's a featured critic at twitchfilm.com. He's a host on CTV News Channel, and he's a regular contributor to Cineplex.com, MoviePhone, and other freelance outlets. And you can follow him on Twitter at filmfest_CA. Filmfest_CA. He's at the Cannes Film Festival in France, and he helped us cover it a couple of years ago, two Cannes Film Festivals ago. Jason was kind enough to call in live from the Cannes Film Festival, and we're going to get the latest of all the big movies. It's one of the biggest film festivals, if not the biggest film festival in the world, and tons of movie stars go there, and they debut and premiere a massive amount of movies that go on to become either big hits or not. But Jason Gorber is with us. Jason, welcome to the show, and thanks so much for joining us again.
Well, thank you very much. From a nice, beautiful, sunny morning here in southern France. It's not such a bad place to hold a film festival.
Yeah, it is not a bad place. Now, how many times have you been to Cannes?
This is technically my fourth. I've done 3 years in a row as a journalist, and when I was in my early 20s, I actually came here as a student and talked my way in. It's one of the things that I had, the biggest chutzpah that I ever had was when I got here as a student and managed to convince them that I was somebody much more important than I was.
Yeah. I remember you telling me that story when we had you on before. It's a great one. And all right, compared to the other festivals that you've attended, the other Cannes Film Festival that you've attended, how's it going this year?
So far, it's been great, actually. I mean, there's every festival, there's always some up and down. There's somebody looking for the Palme d'Or when it's actually going to show up. This year, I think that we've seen a bunch of films that are really sort of vying for people's attention. There hasn't been that one sort of dramatic, oh, my God, this is going to be the winner,
yeah,
which I kind of enjoy. And I like the diversity of voices. I like the diversity of films that are playing every time at Cannes. I mean, look, this is definitely the year of the three-hour movie. I think what's happened in cinema is that as people go more and more for the blockbuster attitude, that they're like, well, if I'm going to have an independent film that a sort of select audience is probably going to check out anyway, I'm just going to make it sort of my director's cut. And I'm not going to necessarily be as cognizant of audience expectations as I am of just making the film I want to make. On the one hand, that's extraordinary. On the one hand, that's what you want from your artist. On the other hand, it makes for a lot of three-hour movies. And sometimes some of those films absolutely could do with a little bit of trim just to make them better films,
yeah,
right? That maybe the creative people to get into Cannes are a little bit too close to the film still. After the premiere here, sometimes they get cut down. So by the time they play like Telluride or Toronto, they're tweaked just a little bit, 20 minutes here or there, and make a film that's even more extraordinary than when it played here at its first premiere.
Give me a couple of examples of some of the three-hour extravaganzas that you've been seeing.
Well, there's this Tony Erdmann that everybody is, a lot of people are going quite crazy for. It's this German film. If the story is to be believed, Berlin actually turned it down. And then here it plays Cannes, and people are going gaga for it. It's a three-hour movie about a father who sort of is a comedic guy. He puts in fake teeth. He's a very silly guy. And his daughter is sort of a mid-40s business executive who's in charge of deciding whether or not certain oil companies should fire a bunch of people, basically, just one of those business consultants. So you have a very serious daughter and a very non-serious father, and it should be like this jokey, silly, dramedy thing that's taking place. And instead, what we get over this three-hour arc is amazing highs and amazing lows, like giant lifts between drama and non-drama, and the audience just went crazy for it. So that when you have this really beautiful, austere drama elements, then suddenly it plays out with these broad comedic things, the audience went wild. So that's the kind of thing. In a three-hour comedy, you know you're doing something a little bit different than, say, the latest Adam Sandler movie.
Yeah, yeah. Wow, that's interesting. And does that have a distributor yet or no?
Honestly, since I'm in the middle of the bubble, I believe the Americans have picked it up for distribution. I don't know what the status is. It might be Sony, but that, unfortunately, I don't know, because I'm in the middle of the bubble. It's so hard to keep track of just what movie I'm seeing next, let alone whether it's coming out.
Okay.
But that is a film that for sure will be on the festival circuit. Just based on its initial screening alone, this is something that people are already talking about.
I'm very excited to, you know, there are certain films that I do want to ask you about, and I know that you've seen some of them. The one that is on the top of my list that I'm so curious about, one of my favorite filmmakers working today, and I think he's the real deal, one of the best American filmmakers working today, is Jeff Nichols. I loved Midnight Special. I loved Mud. I love Take Shelter, and I love Shotgun Stories. This guy, 4 for 4 as far as I'm concerned. And I cannot wait to see Loving. Tell everybody what it's about, and I understand it's pretty great.
First of all, 5 for 5.
Yeah.
Loving is about the couple in Virginia who were arrested in 1958 for getting married. They were quite simply an interracial couple in a state where that was illegal to be. And it, instead of being a histrionic courtroom drama, instead of having Kevin Costner show up at the end, this is the most subtle, beautiful, rich, and emotionally raw telling of this story I can think of. Mm. It's absolutely a knockout. And the story is done with such deftness, such directorial courage, that it is just amazing to witness. Bill Egerton and Ruth Negga are a revelation performance-wise. It is all about reticence. Look, this, Jeff Nichols is the guy that gave us Michael Shannon, basically.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So you have that guy that's a supreme quiet rage, filled with sudden explosions of anger. This strips all that away. Where you would think that like you're sort of waiting for the shoe to drop, but the film never allows you to do that. And it comes at its core that it's just about two people who love each other. So get out of their way.
Yeah.
Like don't and as more and more people decide that they have to define what this means for them, it becomes more and more problematic. Look, with all the conversations going on, particularly in the United States, about that very definition, about what it means to love another person, about what role that plays, about what role the state plays in actually shaping that, the Loving trial continues to have incredible resonance. But as a film, what it does, it gets to the absolute core of these people, which they're quiet people who never sought out the attention or never sought to change the world. And in so many ways, with their quiet humanity, they were able to do so. And this film exhibits that quiet humanity in a way I've seen few films do. It is absolutely extraordinary, spine-chilling stuff, and may well be Jeff's best film.
Wow.
It's certainly his least allegorical. It is an absolute straight-up telling of their story, but done with such poetry and dexterity that I was just blown away, quite simply.
I can't tell you how even more excited I am about seeing it. I'm just such a huge fan of Nichols. From the moment I saw Shotgun Stories, I remember thinking to myself, wow, who is this guy? You know, like,
yeah.
It was such a great film. And you know, I'm from Chicago, Jason, so I knew Michael Shannon when Michael Shannon was just a guy living in his car, you know, doing storefront theater. And to see the kind of work that Jeff Nichols gets out of him is just amazing. It is.
Okay, and look, Michael Shannon obviously is a good luck charm. He always plays the big role. He plays here a life photographer. He's in the movie for about 3 minutes, and you could feel the entire crowd. This is not when, like, you know, George Clooney shows up. George Clooney, we all love and stuff like that. But it's Michael Bloody Shannon. For us, he's an A-lister, but
hell
not
yeah.
For everybody.
Absolutely.
But when Michael Shannon shows up on screen for this little role, you could feel the audience fall in love with him. Like, you could just feel the connection that people had with this character. And again, this is a beautiful little Michael Shannon moment. Sure, it, in some ways, is maybe stunt casting. Anybody potentially could have been cast to play that role. But the fact that it's him in a Jeff Nichols movie gives so much, like, emotional baggage to any fans of Nichols.
Yeah.
And just seeing him, what he does when he takes his photograph, you're just like, oh, Michael, man, that is such a beautiful choice.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
So, I cannot say enough. I love Loving. It's as simple as that.
Loving. Okay, great. I was not aware, another thing that that played at Cannes that you saw, Close Encounters with Vilmos Zsigmond, one of my favorite cinematographers of all time. I had the honor of monitoring a Q&A with him, having him on my show. He signed my poster for Blowout. One of my favorite cinematographers and one of the nicest gentlemen I've ever met. I wasn't even aware that they did a documentary tribute to him. Tell me about it.
Yeah, so this one, I didn't have quite the same connection with him you did. I had an amazing 10-minute conversation when he was at TIP showing McCabe versus Miller. Yeah. Just a sweetheart, just one of the truly great visionary cinematographers, a guy who, when he was, I guess he was in his 20s, he and Laszlo Kovacs took a bunch of cameras out and shot the revolution as it came to his country,
right?
As it came to Hungary.
And that was, by the way, Jason, that was the reason for the Q&A that I did. They hosted a screening of the documentary about him and Laszlo.
Amazing.
Yeah, and I got to do the Q&A afterwards.
So what this doc is, Close Encounters, with obviously a slightly facetious look at one of his most famous films that he shot.
Yeah.
But what it is he came to Paris, and he gave a talk about his stuff, and the filmmakers taped him and have a bunch of clips. Now, that sounds like it won't be so interesting, but it's Vilmos Zsigmond. So the images are amazing. And here I am at Cannes seeing some of the great cinema of the world, and all I want to do is go home and watch, I don't know, Deer Hunter again.
Yeah.
Or go home and watch Close Encounters. Look, it even made me want to watch Sugarland Express again because it showed one of the shots that he does there. It's just incredible.
Yeah.
And he's such a good conversationalist, but honestly, the thing that will blow you away is that the documentary opens in an amazing way, which he's just sitting there in a director's chair, and you see a shot, and it looks fine. It's a video interview talking headshot. And then they hand him the monitor, and he starts tweaking his own lightings. And he's changing the backlight, and he's changing this, and he's changing that. So you see in 2 minutes the process of a great cinematographer shooting something for documentary video. And then you saw the initial shot, and then 2 minutes later you see the final shot. And it's subtle, but you're like, oh, yeah, that's better.
That's great.
So as a survey, as an overview of this incredible filmmaker's work, it's a lot of fun. It's absolutely it's a conversation that few people actually manage to have with a man. And the fact that they actually recorded it before he passed is just one of those testaments what he's doing. Look, there's a roundtable interview with him, Askel Wexler, and a whole bunch of AFC people, which will, again, as a cinematographer nerd, will blow your mind.
Yeah.
There's congees in it. There's some fantastic, fantastic, great shooters. Look, film guys like us, we get a little bit crazy about this stuff, about even the technicians. But Vilmos is really one of those people who helped shape how we see cinema. And the fact that he has a tribute of this sort of level is definitely something we're celebrating.
That's great. Okay. Jason, hang on, okay?
Yep.
All right. Jason Garber is with us, a film journalist based in Toronto. He's a featured critic at twitchfilm.com. He's a host on CTV News Channel. He's a contributor to Cineplex, Movie Phone, and others. He is covering he's covering the Cannes Film Festival, and he's live in Cannes right now and giving us a great report here. We'll take a quick break, and we'll come back and talk a little bit more with Jason live from the Cannes Film Festival on 720 WGN. All right. Morning, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower. My guest is Jason Garber. He's a film journalist based out of Toronto. He is covering the Cannes Film Festival. He has been kind enough to take time out of his incredibly busy schedule over there in France to give us a preview of some of the films and tell us what's going on at the Cannes Film Festival. So we welcome Jason back. Welcome back, Jason.
Hello.
So have you been a lot of stars littering the carpet out there at the Cannes Festival?
Yeah, Julia Roberts made her first appearance at Cannes, and people went bonkers, obviously.
Yeah.
When somebody like Julia shows up, everybody gets super happy. George Clooney, Jodie Foster were here for Money Monster. That's a good example of the kind of stuff that plays. Like, Money Monster's out in theaters now in North America.
Right.
But the fact that it got a little bit of a splash and, a little bit of cachet for playing here. Same with Nice Guys, which I guess opens this coming weekend. You had Ryan Gosling, you had Russell Crowe, Shane Black. So even for these sort of bigger, broader Hollywood films, sort of indie Hollywood films, let's call them.
Yeah.
Not independent, but the studio pictures that aren't the big tent poles. Cannes actually a really good way of giving these films cachet. I spent yesterday a little bit of time with Kristen Stewart. She's in a couple films here, actually. She's in the Woody Allen film, and then she's in the personal shopper film, Olivier de Sayas, the film was actually booed by some people, and they actually discussed that at length at the press conference about how people actually react to it. It's very interesting because her dynamic is she brings so much stardom and so much baggage that you can feel the reticence in even the answer she was giving. She started giving an answer because it's a very metaphysical film. When she started answering the film, she stopped herself. She's like, oh, well, this quote's going to get used. In other words, she's so self-reflective about the what she does, her communication. She is absolutely sort of like the megastar of the Twitter generation, as opposed to someone like George and Julia, who, you know, we're on first-name basis, who are just kind of out there. I mean, like Clooney, unafraid to discuss politics, unafraid to do whatever he's doing, where you could feel Kristen's more reticence. I think she's been burned so often by some really nasty tabloid stuff that even when she's giving a simple answer about her artistic craft, there's a tremendous reticence there.
Yeah.
Again, fascinating. All kinds of people from all kinds of ilk. And Julia Roberts wore barefoot as she walked up the red carpet. Whether or not it was a protest about the crazy high heel policy here at Cannes, that's a whole other conversation to have.
Let me ask you about another film. I'm curious, and I don't know if you've seen it yet or not. Have you seen The Neon Demon yet?
No, we're seeing it in a couple days, and I cannot wait. I'm a huge fan of Nicholas Vinning Refn, and this one's made a little bit, not complicated, but a little bit amusing, because longtime collaborator Mads Mikkelsen is on the jury this year.
Uh-oh.
And he mentioned in the jury interviews, they asked him, they're like, well, what are you going to do? Because Refn's got a film here in competition, you got to vote on it. George Miller, God bless George Miller,
yes.
Mad Max's George Miller, is the jury president. They had that conversation, and Matt's actually offered to step back, and they're like, don't be ridiculous. We voted him. If we love the movie, we're going to love the movie.
Yeah.
So I am super excited about the weird, demonic model movie, so we'll see how that all plays.
Yeah, I mean, I saw the trailer for it. I'm very interested. I have to say I hated his last movie.
Only God Forgives?
Yes, I hated it. But I did, obviously, I love Drive and I love his other stuff as well. But this trailer looks really, really interesting and kind of crazy. And the cast is kind of all over the map, too.
Yeah, the cast is bonkers. You got Elle Fanning, you got all kinds of people in it. And look, I really like Only God Forgives. I wasn't here that year. That was the year just before I was.
Yeah.
But I think that people either like Claire Denis or Nicholas Vinning Refn. I think like it's one of those Beatles, Elvis Beatles kind of dynamic. I'm absolutely in Team Refn. I think Only God Forgives has great moments, and I'm just hoping that Neon Dreams actually lives up to not even the hype, but certainly the expectations.
Okay. Well, one of the bigger movies that opened that was screened at the Cannes Film Festival is Spielberg's latest, which we'll be hearing about a lot. That's the BFG, based on the Roald Dahl book. How was that? Did that turn out okay?
BFG turned out absolutely okay. It's a great word for it.
Yeah.
It will introduce entire generations to the story. It is very sweetly done, and it's a throwback in the best sense. This is Spielberg channeling his E.T., his inner E.T. in a way that he hasn't in some time. It's written by the late Melissa Matheson. And again, we go back to the film, there's stuff you get at Cannes. On the dais was Steven Spielberg, Kathleen Kennedy, and Frank Marshall up there for this film. And I'm like, okay, so here's the three billionaires who are responsible for, I don't know, four-fifths of the top 10
right.
box office films of all time.
Right.
And they're there celebrating this film, which is ostensibly, you know, a kid's film about a giant who kidnaps a little girl. The little girl's fantastic. The effects will take some getting used to for some people, but sort of we're getting into that sort of surreal territory where when you actually take the human face and stretch it into gigantic proportions, it looks a little weird.
Yeah,
it's definitely worth seeing and definitely a lot of fun.
Okay, all right. Now, talk a little bit about Captain Fantastic. I'm really looking forward. Tell everybody about this one.
Yeah, I saw it last night, and it is extraordinary. I missed it at Sundance. Matt Ross, who I knew from, I guess he was on Big Love. He was the weird older brother on Big Love.
Yep.
He's been directing a bunch of stuff, and he gets Viggo Mortensen with the weirdest Partridge Family-like family ever. He's basically training to be autodidacts and to be wildsman. And just the dynamic that plays out. So you have this family living in the woods that has to confront actual society when their mom actually passes away. So it shouldn't work. It should just be saccharine Sundance stuff.
Yeah, I got to tell you, Jason, that's what it looks like from the trailer, and I was very happily surprised to read your tweet about it.
Man, it's so good.
Yeah.
again, there's some moments that just don't connect, but it is so beautifully done, it is so warmly made that I just adored it. I mean, there's and Viggo was fantastic. He's just such a tremendous empathetic actor. And I do wonder sometimes what cinema would have been if Simon Townsend hadn't been fired from the Lord of the Rings movies.
Yeah.
And instead Viggo's brought in because it's allowed him to make these incredible choices. I don't love all of his movies, but it's given him an entire career where he's fearless about what he chooses to do, and this is one of them. You will be happy to know, in terms of the celebrity front, that Katy Perry showed up with her boyfriend, Orlando Bloom. The kids on stage were adorable when they said they wanted to hang out with Orlando. And, of course, because they're just a few rows behind me, I turned around midway through the film. They had taken off, returned at the end so that photographs could be taken. You ever want to see the ridiculousness of a film festival, that's what's taking place.
There you go. All right, Jason, so much, so such a pleasure to talk to you. So much, I really appreciate you you taking the time. I know you're really busy. And have a great time for the rest of the Cannes Film Festival, okay?
Man, it's always great to talk to you anytime, my brother.
Okay, take care. There you go. Jason Gorber, everybody. Live from the Cannes Film Festival. That's pretty cool. And so we have a link to all of that stuff where you can follow Jason and read his stuff on our Facebook page, facebook.com/Nick D Show.